Okay, with winning screenplay writer from the Comedy Festival, Jim Fletta, Revolving Doors is the feature film. It is a it's a comedy for sure. It's also a coming of age story. It's also about musicians. It's about music in general and about people trying to find success in the music industry. Is that a correct assessment of your script?
Yeah, that's it. You nailed it.
So tell me about like it's almost like as someone like yourself, like it's almost like an allegory for like any industry, any artistic industry, a writer, filmmaker, kind of down the luck, or people are kind of trying to figure out the angles or the kind of point of views to make some sort of success in the artistic industry, I guess, right?
Yeah, I think that everybody has lots of moments where you feel like you're on the cutting edge, and you're right around, about to turn that corner. And usually, obviously, in the world of film and television, I mean, the goal is to make that corner a little bit further and further away each opportunity you get. And I just wanted to put something together that, yeah, that kind of mirrored it, that I took a look at two guys that I thought were interesting, and then also was able to explore all those people around them, and how, I mean, I think all of us, I think, as creative people, I mean, there are not a ton of creative people that is what they do for a living. It's like I'm their side hustle here. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And there's a lot of other things floating around out there that kind of get in the way of that sometimes. And that could be simple things like I can't pay my rent. That could be things like,
Yeah.
I've got kids, I've got, there's all sorts of things. So that was kind of the idea, was to have some fun with them and look at the world around them and see how that impacted what they wanted to do with their lives.
I think there's one moment in the script where like a divorced parent kind of moves in, right? That's
Correct.
seems to be a that's a good angle. That's a good kind of point of view, right? Where it's like the parent has to move into the kid's house, right?
Yeah, and in this scenario, essentially, yeah, the mom and dad are splitting apart, and the mom sort of makes a beeline to their only son's house, and she wants to move in, and essentially she wants to win, and she wants to stick it to her ex-husband, and the way to do that is to try to, become a little more cozy with her only child. And yeah, and I just thought it was kind of a funny thing that here you've got parents that, the kids don't have their stuff together, neither do the parents, and then here we are that, their son is already a mess, can't pay his rent, all sorts of things, and then she moves in, and it hopefully opened up some comedic opportunities.
Yeah.
He's got a roommate who is like, hey, this is awesome. Can she pay for the rent? Can she cook? Can she do all these things? And then you've got the son saying, no, I'm too old. This is not happening here. And then at the very end of the script, you have the dad arrive too and basically says, hey, I'm not going to let you have the upper hand on me. This is my son too. And so we're both going to move in. We're going to see how this goes.
Yeah. So then the two characters, yeah, shenanigans take place. The two characters, kind of like they moonlight. What do you mean? Like, I'm just curious. I know you kind of have in the script, but you say in the synopsis they moonlight as karaoke stars.
Yeah,
Does that mean
so
that there's always like a prop in, or like a, what do you call it? There's like a good one in the group, I guess, right? To kind of like motivate other people to do it, I guess, or how does it work?
yeah, so the two guys, you've got one guy who is, an actual musician, and more or less kind of classically trained, is an actual musician. And then you've got another guy who loves, 80s and 90s hair metal, and he's clearly like the energy of that group. And so the whole idea with these guys moonlighting as karaoke stars is that's what they do. They spend their time, they have that karaoke machine back up, and they play at a bar that predominantly serves to elderly people. And they've kind of created this little fan base of elderly clients that love to get out, which is not much, and they get out to see these guys, and they love to bring their walkers and their oxygen tanks and all those kinds of things, and really kind of see what these two guys are able to bring to the table.
Gotcha. Yeah. So this it's I remember this guy. I haven't gone to a karaoke bar in ages, but I remember this, like I'm from a tourist city and they used to have ringers. I was looking for the word ringers.
Oh, okay.
They was like they would like they have these people who are just these fantastic singers, like kind of like like ringing up the energy, because like I guess you can't, it's hard to have like five horrible singers in a row, I guess, right? At the karaoke bar.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. These two guys are actually, they're employed by the owner of this bar.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They get employed by the owner, like basically.
Yeah, they get employed. But yeah. I definitely know. I mean, I've been to some karaoke joints and somebody walks on stage and I mean, I have two thoughts. I think A, wow, they're really talented, and B, wow, this must be it's all that's going on for them, right? I mean, they show up and this is my big moment. This is
the approach to it.
Yeah, nobody recognized my talent, but maybe one of you drunk idiots out there is going to do it for me.
Yeah, exactly. Or they can go, they can audition them for American Idol, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. So then are you familiar with the music industry, how it works? Or like, did you do some research for the script?
Yeah, no, I did some research, and I mean, you know, in my past, I was sort of a budding songwriter, and you know, played guitar and recorded some songs on my little, you know, 4-track recorder, things like that, and had kind of looked into it, but I was not talented enough, and B, you know, I just enjoyed the writing and the film side of things a little bit more, but I definitely did a little research, and that's kind of what some of the other episodes, once you get past the pilot, get into is what that journey actually looks like and what their world looks like as they do get a little bit of recognition and how they're able to try to navigate that, you know, not really knowing a ton about it themselves. And that's, you know, part of, I think, the comedy and some of the conflict that happens later on down the road.
So do you have like a set? It seems like you've written a lot of scripts and a lot of stories. Do you have you have an organized kind of pattern? Do you write at a certain time? Do you like write only when you're inspired? Like what's your kind of schedule usually like?
Yeah. I mean, I try to write all the time. I mean, I try not to wait for inspiration because that could be a very, very long pause at times.
Yeah.
So I like to stay with it. I like to, you know, even if it's just, you know, notes on my phone or having a, you know, Google Doc that I'm just kind of going around and just keep adding things to it. And, you know, I tend to work on multiple things at a time, you know, because I've got, you know, a few ideas or I've got a script that's almost done or this or that, or I've got, you know, this treatment that I'm trying to work on. And I think maybe that's the ADD in me. I don't know. You know, it allows me to kind of look at different pieces at different times and bring different things. But yeah, I try to write every day. You know, usually there's like a set time that I have an opportunity. And sometimes it's only 20 minutes. Sometimes it's an hour. But that's kind of the window that I try to fit myself into.
Like you always have to grind it out, I guess, in a sense. Like you make
sure. Yeah, it is absolutely a grind for sure. Yeah.
And when did you kind of like discover that this is something you want to spend a lot of your time with writing and like especially screenplays? When did this kind of come to you?
You know, it was, I don't know, maybe, you know, maybe 10 years ago or something. I was thinking, you know, I started looking around at what I was going to do. And, you know, I'd always enjoyed writing, but I had never really looked into screenwriting. I'd always enjoyed, you know, songs or short stories or, you know, things like that. And I started to look into screenwriting and started to realize like that it was a really cool medium and it was fun and it was kind of evolving and it was creative. It wasn't a novel. There were far fewer words on the page, but you know, that helps a little bit, but you know, I kind of equate it more to poetry. There's fewer words, but those words have to mean a little bit more. You got to be really, really selective. And so it's been fun kind of going through and writing some absolutely horrible work, obviously that I never want anybody to see, but also trying to evolve and figure out how this whole thing works and what the process really should look like.
Gotcha. And so is it true you got a short produced a couple years ago?
I did. Yeah. I've had, so I made a short of my own a few years ago. And that ended up in the LA Film Festival and a few things like that. But I'm not really, you know, I'd say my strength is, you know, I mean, I could direct. I can, the camera operation is a little bit not my strength, even though I've got some background in that and editing as well. But yeah, I did. And then about 2 summers ago, I had written a short maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And producer contacted me kind of in the COVID time, actually. I think yep. Everybody was bored. He was looking for something to do. And we came out of the COVID and were able to kind of put that together, which was a fun experience to see it all kind of come to life.
It says, well, I'm assuming that's what you want. You want your this work and other works to kind of get produced and shown, I guess, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's always the goal. But it's always the goal. It's rarely the reality. And I think that's where the grind part of it comes in is, you know, this belief that someday it's actually going to happen and something's going to break. And you just keep writing. I mean, I think what I'm writing now is better than what I was writing, you know, a couple of years ago. And so, but it all is also like you're looking at shorts, you're looking at just different ways to kind of, you know, figure out how to make contacts and connect with people. And then you just see where it goes from there.
So where are you based?
I'm in Orange County, California.
Okay. So are you allowed to mention what your day job is?
Oh yeah. Actually, well, I'm a film teacher.
That's what I, yeah. So what, for high school students or?
Yeah. High school students. So yeah, which is a cool job. I mean, A, it keeps me connected. And I tell them, I say, I'm not just some guy who watched, you know, I don't know. I didn't watch Shawshank Redemption and get inspired and feel like, oh, I should teach you guys how to make movies. You know, like I'm still looking at, you know, I'm still doing it. I'm still, you know, reading, I'm still learning, I'm still doing all that. But yeah, it's a really great day job. I have no complaints about it. I like going to work. It keeps me sort of connected to it. And that's where the timing sort of gets, you know, I've got like a set window that I know I can sit down and do it. And, but it is cool. And I hope that it's good for the students. I hope it's kind of, you know, cause I can tell them, hey, I'm giving you notes and I know notes are terrible. I know you want me to just say, this is awesome. You're the best person ever, but it doesn't always work like that.
Well, what are you teaching them? You're teaching them how to make films or is it like theoretical? Like, what is it?
Yeah, no, so I've got two levels of classes that I teach. And the first level is sort of an introductory film class. So we cover everything. We cover screenwriting, like what a script looks like, you know, what the format looks like. We cover directing, editing, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And then the second year is more production heavy, but that's where you can kind of get into things like what's German expressionism, you know, those kinds of things that you know, what are some real visual motifs that you can use in your film? So you start to add layers to what they're doing as they go along. In the beginning, they don't even know how to unfold the tripod, you know, so you're kind of limited as to what you can do, but it's really kind of a cool experience to see them grow out of it. And then I've got several students that, you know, move on, go to film school and continue their studies. And others, I try to get them to understand that, you know, their work with the camera, their editing, I mean, it's a skill that can be monetized. And I try to really, really encourage them to get out and make some money, whether that's social media or whatever they're doing, to kind of see. And even if they want to be a dentist, they can still do some of this. I just love the creativity of it all and encouraging them to stay a part of it.
So when did this, were you a teacher before you did this, like from other curriculum, like before you did the film teaching?
Yeah. I taught English. I taught English, and it was like trying to get a film thing started was just, you know, people were like, no, we're not going to do film. And then finally able to convince them. And so it's been like my own writing, it's been a huge learning process of what I need to do that's helpful. And, you know, things that I give them that aren't wastes of time. And, you know, we have a couple of mottos. I mean, one of our motto is we are not chemistry. We're not trying to be chemistry. We're trying to enjoy ourselves and create sort of this like creative environment, which is supposed to be fun. Play music, you know, if there's a soccer ball, kick it around. I mean, you know, I've worked in creative environments. I've done some copywriting and some things like that. And I know what that environment is supposed to feel like. And that's what I try to cultivate as much as I can, you know, on a high school campus.
That's pretty cool. So it's like I'm assuming they have a budget for you and to make some products and then the equipment and stuff like that can get a little pricey, I guess, right?
Yeah, it does. It gets a little pricey. But you know, the goal, yeah, is to you know, all these kids know how to use their phone. Well, I mean, they kind of know how to use their phone. I joke that they know everything about technology, yet they know very little. They can't fix anything or problem solve, that kind of stuff. But they know how to use their phones. But yeah, I teach them how to use the camera. And, you know, we have the Adobe suite. So they use After Effects and Audition and Premiere and all of those kinds of things. And yeah, so there's a budget for it. And each year is a little bit of groveling, you know, goes into it like, hey, we could use a couple more cameras kind of thing, but try to get as much equipment as you can that you can, you know, lend out, teach them how to use and let them kind of see what they can do with it from there.
Is there a movie that you show them every year like that kind of like as an I'm just curious, like in terms of like of inspiration or kind of like show like how to make a film, like kind of a movie example?
Let's see, I'm trying to think of what. So like my second year, we tend to focus more on we focus a little bit more on TV. So I show them a lot of pilots. I show them like pilots that they haven't seen. So I show them the pilot to Lost. I show them the 30 Rock pilot, you know, those kinds of things, because I want them to I show them Freaks and Geeks. You
your
know,
generation, shows, I guess, right?
Yeah. But yeah, you know,
that said, Lost is for network TV, which is, doesn't even really exist anymore. It's a pretty fantastic pilot.
It is. And so the goal, yeah, is I'm a big believer. And I mean, for myself too, I mean, I'll flip it, because for them, I think I always joke around. I say, this is like an old person word called visual literacy. You know, like I want them to know what the Wonder Years pilot looked like. And I'm the same way now. Like, I don't want to just watch older things. I want to watch what's happening now, because I'm the reverse of what they are. Right. I've got all this old knowledge, but I need to keep up with what the new knowledge is. So, but as far as that, I mean, one movie I show them Back to the Future. That's one movie I show.
I was just
them.
Talking about that in another, the last podcast.
How were you?
Oh, he was a young kid too. He's at university, and his parents got him to force him to watch Back to the Future over and over again.
Yeah.
We're just talking about exposition, the art of exposition. First 20 minutes is like, it's all information. There's really no plot development, just information that the audience needs to like understand the second act, I guess, right?
Yeah, so many plants and payoffs, and yeah, it's just a really, really smart movie. And so yeah, it's a great one to show them, and because especially too is, and you know too, like once you, if you have a little bit of film background, or not, like especially if you don't, and you start to now look at things differently. Like one of the books that I have them read is, we read The Writer's Journey. You know, and I tell them, like, here's the formula. Here's one of the formulas that are out there. And your job isn't, you know, to know everything about the formula, but it's to know that it exists so that you can do something like a Pulp Fiction, right? And you can completely break that formula and be creative and some of that. And so that's a lot of the rules of the road type of thing. And then you look at something like Back to the Future, and they've spent all year working on, like, you know, what camera angle matters and what's a visual motif. And now they start to say, oh my gosh, look at all these pieces to it. And it's kind of a fun experience. But I always joke around. I say, no one's going to want to go to the movies with you anymore. You know, you're going to know what's happening. You're going to be familiar with, oh my gosh, this is, you know, and so, and some of them become kind of those obnoxious people as they watch movies, I think.
Obviously, I think more like because of festivals, I think I watch more movies than anybody. But the thing is, though, the difference is that when, if it's a good story, you get sucked in no matter what. Then you can kind of break it down and watch it the second time. But it's only start breaking down the plot points or even the camera or the direction is when you're taken out of the story, when you're not really paying attention to you're not emotionally involved anymore. You're like, something has made you force you to jump out of the story. So then you start breaking it down, like as a nerd or as something for fun, right? So.
Yeah. Or when your stupid teacher says, hey, look at that camera angle. See how they're only focusing on the plutonium? That's a shot. That's a plant, you know? And then they're like, okay, yeah, thanks, guy. You know, so.
Well, yeah, thanks. It's, I guess, the opening shot, right? The tracking shot of the clock. Yeah. I haven't seen the movie in ages, but it's like, it's just a tracking shot of all the information you need to know. And also, it also sets up Doc Brown, who doesn't come for 20 more minutes. It also establishes his character. It shows who he is by the invention that he did, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So they has a lot of like, it's kind of ingenious. I know this is probably a cliche to say this now, but Breaking Bad Pilots, probably one of the best pilots ever produced. I don't know if they're too young. They're too young to watch that. I don't know. I can't remember the content, but
Yeah, they're not necessarily too young. It's just, you know, if you have it, someone in charge of the school walk in and they're like, "What are you watching?"
yeah, so
You know,
the guy in his underwear, right? So.
And so I always tell, sometimes they'll ask to watch things and I'll say, "Hey, when you graduate and are gone, I will still be here and I need a job. So
Yeah.
you can watch it on your own time. We'll talk about it because I've seen it, but you watch it on your own time."
A perfectly executed pilot. Like just it's if you watch the pilot and then you like if you're like season five, go back and watch the pilot because it all makes sense to what they're doing, right? So
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's a great one. You know, one of my other favorite TV pilots is the Cheers pilot. I feel
Diane,
like
yeah.
that is just that is so well done. And that whole, like, everyone's life kind of, you know, you can totally see where it's going. And it's just such a really, really well executed pilot that sets up so much that they're doing those next several years. So that's another great one, just on a completely different level of genre versus a Breaking Bad, which is perfect for that genre, and I feel like Cheers is a really, really well done for
Yeah,
that
well,
comedy
I think the
genre.
first season of Cheers, it's only in the bar, right? Like
Yeah.
they don't leave the bar, and you can still
No.
like.
It's amazing how, you know, and that's actually one of the shows that I looked at a little bit thinking, you know, like in my own pilot, like I want to go out of the bar, but I don't want to go too much. And I know that because I also understand, you know, budget, and there's a lot of factors. And I think if you tell someone, "Hey, I've got this comedy pilot," and they read it and they go, "Wow, this is funny, and there are very few locations and not 8,000 people in it," wow, now we maybe have something that we can do, because we've all been told this is great, but here's the budget and here's what we can afford, and this doesn't quite fit into that, you know, ballpark.
You might be too young for this, but Barney Miller. I've been watching some Barney Miller. One location all the time.
Really?
Just in the precinct, and it sets up like kind of like an allegory of society, but it also sets up guest starring roles. Like every episode, there's a new character, right? So like or characters. I don't know if you're probably too young for it, but it's like.
Yeah, I haven't seen much of it, but I'll check it out.
Yeah, check it out. It's like it actually he tries to go out and then the first couple seasons, but then season three, it's like they don't leave for like the last four seasons of like 100 episodes. They don't leave the precinct ever.
Yeah,
For
that's
yeah.
amazing.
And
You
it's
know,
diverse too, right? There's actually like, you know, in the 70s, there's like a like they're one of the characters is Vietnamese, one of the characters is black, one of the characters, they're all in like a woman, like it's all like kind of a diverse kind of cast as well, right?
Wow. Yeah,
So it's like
those shows are hidden gems, because yeah, I mean, it's like I looked at, I think it's like maybe episode two or something. Sometimes I'll show them like episode two of Cheers, and I think there's the guy that comes in and he's got the son who's gay, and he's a white man. He's dating African American. I mean, this was 1982. This was way ahead of schedule. So those things that you really appreciate about some of those shows, and it just goes to show you how smart those people were putting it together.
But then there's a problem, I guess, right? I'm trying to remember like that. But there's like
Yeah, there's a
still the
problem.
location,
You
right?
know, he can't figure out, like, he's trying to talk to someone who used to work at the bar, and that guy
Yeah.
is dead, and he can't figure out how to talk
Yes.
to his son. And Coach gives him like the weirdest sort of, you know, worst advice, but and this is the smart part about how they wrote it, that advice is so terrible and so out of left field that it motivates this guy to say, "Oh wow, you're right, maybe I should do this." And then coaches solve the problem and everybody wins. You know, they met the needs of the fan base, but they did it in a way that wasn't too controversial. And that was I mean, those things are hard to, you know, hard lines to walk.
Speaking of TV pilots, James Burrows, who directed that episode, wrote a book. He just wrote a book recently, and if like I don't know if you ever have time, but read that book because it's
Okay.
like he did a lot of pilots, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think he did Friends and he did Matt. Sorry,
Will and Grace?
Will and Grace. Yeah,
Yeah.
thank you. He
Yeah.
did a bunch of other ones, but he talks about like. Doing pilots, setting up the tone and setting up the thing. Yeah, it's a great book about
Okay.
because he directed so many TV episodes, right?
Yeah.
It's in the thousands, right? So he talks
Yeah.
about like building up a pilot. He directed the Cheers pilot, right? So you went from Cheers to Friends, which are like you know, that's like the two landmark shows, one landmark show of the 80s, one landmark show of the 90s, right? So right. He's heavily involved, set up the characters. So yeah, so it's like it's a really good book for like from someone like yourself to take a wealth of knowledge. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, cool. Yeah, for sure. I didn't even. Yeah, I'll check it out. That sounds great.
So then go back to your script. So then, so you work. I guess you work like you're going to work tomorrow. go back to work tomorrow. So you do your curriculum, and then you kind of like go home. It seems like there's a Tracy that you're boring their Zoom. So I'm assuming that's your wife.
Yeah.
So basically you have a family, but then you're still, like I said, you still try to write at least once a day, I guess. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, yeah. And I've got three kids. It's a lot, it's difficult, but
wow, okay.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's, I enjoy it. And they know that, you know, I think it's also, you know, cool for them. You know, and they read my stuff sometimes. I mean, you know, so it's kind of fun, and I can, you know, they've got different, they have, everyone in my house has different sensibilities. So it's a diverse audience. So yeah, but that'll be the plan, is go there and, you know, try to make a difference in young people's lives, I guess. And then come home and try to do a little bit of that and kind of keep plugging along and keep progressing. And, you know, but, and it's also, I mean, it's one of those things too, with the time. I mean, you know, there are times when you feel like, oh my gosh, but then there are scripts like this that, you know, people have recognized, and I have written enough things and I've had enough things ignored to know when you feel like you have something that's got a little bit of value to it. And so that's one of the things that kind of keeps you going a little bit as well, as those little things that kind of come up and you're like, wow, okay, now let's kind of take a look at what we can do with this. So.
Gotcha. Well, congratulations on this script. You're in select company, and I hope you enjoyed the experience so far. And yeah, I wish you the best of luck with this script and your other scripts, and keep teaching, keep molding the Orange County community students.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. You guys have been great. It's been a terrific festival. So I really appreciate all your time.
One, two, three, four, five, six.